Hey, well, welcome everyone. As I said earlier, we are just in a strange time, and if you hear dogs barking or kids yelling, that's fine. But they're welcome, and we're going to be networking, and we're in business, and we're all going to share ideas of what each other are doing, and try to get through this the best we can, and. So it'll be same time, same place every 2 weeks. And, of course, we're basically going to eventually we'll be getting back to the RFP and also best practices. But for the meantime, right now, we're trying to see what other people are doing and seeing how we're getting through this and what we can do in that vein. We always start out with news from Washington. Get the latest thing. Now, I am cautious. If I'd rather have you have a line open than put us on hold, so because we might get music or something like that, so it's a little bit tricky. In that case, I'd have to mute everyone. We use free conference call, which we'll talk about later. It's another time, but it's all open mic, so just a caution. Well, why don't we go on right away? Yes. Someone had something to say? Okay. Let's go to news from Washington. Heather, are you there?
Yes, I am. So we had a bit of, I guess, good news from Washington. We asked them the question that kind of came up at the last PLC, which is, you know, looking at the next RFP for fiscal year 21, does it look like that's still on the same timeline as it was previously indicated to us? And the good news is it is. So at this point, they, you know, as of today, they don't estimate any delays happening with that. So we are still looking at a release of the fiscal year 21 RFP in summer. So now is a great time to start some of those prep activities, some of those things that you can start doing in order to build a better proposal. And that's one thing I always want to tell you guys is, you know, we've got some fantastic resources on the brownfields-toolbox.org. There's a start a program section that really has a ton of information in it. You click on that one section and it looks like it's just a single page, but then if you look over on your right, there's all these different drop-down boxes. It really walks you through the entire process. So especially for those folks that might be joining us that are brand new to this process, I really encourage you to take a look at that section. Again, that's the start a program section on brownfield-toolbox.org. Another great resource we have out there as well is the best practices guide. So the critical components and best practices of successful environmental workforce development and job training programs. You can find that on the toolbox as well underneath the downloads section. So that's something that would be great for anybody that's looking at applying to take a look at to try to get some good insight on some things you can do to build a better RFP. And I think, you know, and I'll kind of say, I think HQ has the same thing to say that we do, which is stay safe, everybody, you know, keep doing what you need to do to keep you and yours healthy and happy. And the other big thing is, you know, reach out to your regional coordinators. Having that constant communication with them is really what's going to help you guys, you know, through this process and through these changes. So, you know, if you haven't already, please reach out to them and just touch bases and just, you know, see what's up and tell them how things are going. On the HMTRI side of things, we've had a couple of questions asked about the all grantee meeting. So right now we are looking at the all grantee meeting being held August 12th and 13th in Alexandria, Virginia, at the Holiday Inn and Suites in Old Town. So we're really excited about that. Now, we live in you know, interesting times and changing times right now. Everything changes on a day-to-day basis. August is very far away. So at this point, what we are saying is we are still planning the meeting in August. We are still moving forward with that idea. We're sure we're contemplating some alternatives and things like that too. But at this point, we're going to still move forward with planning things as usual. So what we would ask of you guys, please go ahead and sign up for the meeting. You can go ahead and register with us. Send that invite back that I sent out to you guys, the little letter to the listserv. Send that back to us indicating that you're going to come. You can even go so far as to register for the hotel because they're not going to charge you for it. And as long as you cancel within, I think it's 72 hours in advance, there's no charge for it. And it's a way to make sure that we kind of hold our slots and we get a good feel for who's coming, especially if we're looking at different alternatives as well. It would be some really good information to have readily available. So keep an eye out on the listserv. I'll be sending another prompt out with the invite letter to register for the All Grantee meeting next week. But if you want it in advance, you can always reach out to me and send me a message at hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. And I will tell you, for the HMTRI team, we already booked our hotels, but at this point we are holding off on making our travel arrangements until we get a little bit closer to the date. But at this point, you know, you can book your hotel and nothing will be charged at this time, and things will be, you know, there is the opportunity to cancel depending on where we are at, globally speaking, in August.
Okay.
So, and then Mike, I think we're going to get ready to transition over to back to you again before we move on to Steve. But does anybody have any questions for the All Grantee meeting before we move on? All right. So, Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, this is
okay.
So, basically, there's no commitment. So you might just sign up. If you're a PLC member, you're attending the PLCs, and if you're not getting notes, you could just send your contact information to Heather, hkballou@eicc.edu. Do you just want to repeat that again so they have it for those who may be new to this call? Okay, hkballou@eicc.edu.
EDU. You are correct, Mike. I was too slow on the unmute today. You beat me to it. Yep, hkballou@eicc.edu.
Good. And like I say, there's no commitment, and you can cancel any time, just like the TV commercial. But don't book your airlines. Don't do that, because we'll have plenty of time for that. But we want to go ahead and think positive on. Also asking about what agenda items you'd like to do. We were talking about that before the call. It's a 2 full days and 3 nights, but 2 full days, and we're going to be, you know, 8 till 5. We're going to be having plenaries. We'll have all the EPA people there. We'll have the regional coordinators there, and we'll have plenty of time to just network and talk about whatever is concerning everyone. So it's really something to consider. These things will all be in the notes. And, of course, as we said, if you're not getting notes, just send your contact information to Heather, and she'll also make sure you're on the list to get the invite to the All Grantee meeting. We also have questions regarding, and many of you who are in contact with your regional coordinators and have probably talked to them already, know all this already, but some of you may not be in contact with your regional coordinator or someone else in your organization is. But basically, regional coordinators, EPA, are fully operational. They're all going now. If you email and you don't hear back, some may be taking some administrative leave, but they all are operating, and they're all sending out, making a point of trying to keep in contact with their grantees. So they're, and the question is, who in your organization are they keeping contact with? So it may not be you're the one that they're talking to, but they are trying to keep in touch with all the organizations that if you're not an active grantee and you don't think you might be on their list, and we put this in the post-session notes, just ask to be put on there. We put all the regional coordinators' contact information in the newsletter, and ask that you're interested, you're going to be submitting a proposal, and if they have a newsletter or contact list, you'd like to be put on it. And many of the regions do have that, and that way they'll get you on the list. They may have your organization, but as I said, they may not have you as an individual. So certainly they're your friends, and they like to have contacts in the mm-hmm. grants. The OMB published, and I'm going to also put this in the newsletter with an attachment of the formal FAQs. They said that basically work plans and budget adjustments will be will be granted, extended. They say they're at the discretion of the regional coordinators and project officers, but for the most part, they will be extended. Anyone who's got a grant that's active, they'll be extended for as much as a year. So those of you who are kind of winding up and still may have your grant is still officially active, you get that extended anyway for the year. Now, the only caveat is it's at no cost to the government. So while the grant terms, work plans can be revised, they'll be revised, and you're going to want to work with your regional coordinators on this. But you don't have to worry. I think you can, when this starts to cool down, you'll have an opportunity to revise your schedules, revise your work plans, revise your budgets, extend your grants. And I think they're going to be very accommodating to all the grants. So, but the operative word there is the first line of contact is your regional coordinator. And you want to keep in touch with them. And they're also interested in seeing what you're doing. If you want to drop them an anecdotal note, of course, we certainly are interested, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But they like to know what everyone's doing, and they may be asking you questions, and they may be very much in touch with you as you go along. Realizing that some of you that are on the call are not the primary contact. So we want to keep those who are not the primary person working with the regional coordinator informed so you would also know what's happening. So we're going to make sure that all of those things are in the notes. Also in the notes, we're going to talk about the meetings. Of course, in-person meetings are pretty much a dead issue. A lot of them are starting later in the fall, in the summer, and extending through the winter. And we'll put all those announcements in the some webinars going on, and there's one in April that I'm just going to point out. It's not for workforce development people. It's more for they call them the MAC grants. These are the people who do cleanup and assessment, and they're having a couple of webinars that might be interested for you to tune into. It's not oriented at all towards workforce development, but it's important that you know what the other side is doing. These are the cleanup people, the people that will be working with contractors that will be hiring your graduates. And you might sign up for it, and I'll put all the sign-up information on it in April 29th and 30th. If you have some time and you want to get away from everyone, just tell them you've got a webinar you've got to attend the 29th and 30th. You could sign up for that and listen to what the other side's doing, even though many of the things they're going to talk about may seem a little strange and don't apply to you. They'll talk about will apply to you. So, well, with that, we want to talk about what everyone's doing, and we want to spend the rest of the time today talking about what you're doing and just exchange ideas. And we certainly realize everyone's different. Everyone's got a different situation. You know, we've got programs that haven't started yet. They were just awarding, or they're planning, or they're getting ready to re-up for the new grant. They may have started their recruitment and awareness, but they're not into classes. Then we've got this whole other group. They began training, and they haven't gotten too far into training, but then we've got some that are mid-training and some that are fairly far along training. And that's a group we want to address in this and future PLCs. That's the toughest group because you just can't shut down, and you want to keep your students engaged. So you want to keep them on the program. And then you've got the people who you're placing people, you're in the process of placing people, you're in post-placement, and you may even have old grantees coming back, old graduates coming back, seeing if you can help them out. So we've got these three groups, and in coming PLCs, we're going to be addressing all of those groups to keep in mind. So while some of the things we're talking about may not apply to you directly because you're in a different group, we're going to share these ideas of, we're going to be throwing out ideas of what people are doing and whether it works for you. You may be well connected. You may not be connected. You may have phones. You may not have phones. Let's do some voyeurism and find out what some of the grantees are doing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve. Steve did a scan of the active grantees, some of you, and responded to this, and they're great response. And he's going to give us an evaluation of what happened in the last couple of weeks when we started to evaluation. So, Steve, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Good afternoon, maybe good morning to some of you on the West Coast. My name's Steve Fenton, and I'm working with HMTRI. I may have met some of you at the National Brownfield Conference in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
What we decided to do about 2 weeks ago, the week of March 16th, we decided to send a scan email out to 38 active programs. So some of you that are on this call, I think, responded. Some of you may have seen it. And basically what we were trying to do was take a snapshot at that point in time, that week, what was going on with all of you in terms of your program situation and how you were impacted by the current situation at the time with COVID-19. And we sent it out to 38 active programs, and 20 of you responded, which is an awesome response rate, over 50%, and we want to thank you for responding. And basically, we asked 7 questions, just one to find out at this particular point in time, the week of March 16th, 7 questions. The first one was, do you currently have a training cohort planned or currently running? That was the first question. And of the 20 programs, 6 responded that they had a program currently running, and anywhere between it just started to all the way about 60% completed. So there were programs that were still running. I was a little surprised that there were that many still running, but the responses we had were between the 17th and 20th. So that's like less than 2 weeks ago. There were 6 programs still running. And then the second question was, if so, where are you in the process? And then they responded if they were involved in student recruitment, applicant selection, whether they had been training or even placement. And we had a variety of responses in different parts of the pipeline where they were. 5 organizations said they were currently recruiting, for example. And I believe Auberly is on this call, right? Did I?
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, good. Okay, because you guys responded with a very, very excellent explanation of your virtual recruitment and virtual screening, and I'll come back to that. But yeah, but that was very fascinating. And then also there was an organization in the process of applicant selection, and 6 organizations were currently again in the training phase. So the third question was, have you suspended your training, and if so, for how long? And of the 20 organizations that responded, 10 had said yes, they had suspended training and had reported that they have suspended all or part of their training programs, and other programs are in the process of considering it. So already, while there were still 6 that were doing training at that time, 10 said that they were suspended, and the remainder, the other 4, said they were considering it. So that's kind of where things were at that point in time. And then the 4th question we asked was, are you able to deliver distance learning? And we actually had 16 responses to that question. 9 organizations indicated they were unable to deliver distance learning at all. 5 said they are currently capable, and 2 others said they are investigating the possibility. So that was kind of a mixed bag, you know, about the potential for distance learning. And the 5th question was, can you communicate with your students? And if so, how do you do it? And the most common forms of communication included phone, email, via text messages, and a variety of other forms, but those were the primary ones. And one organization, it's Push Buffalo. Are they on the call? Anybody from there? No? Okay, I just want to share with you what they wrote, because this kind of explains in a nutshell some of the problems that I think many organizations are having. And they said, basically not easily. In other words, they can't easily communicate with their students. It says, many do not have reliable phone service, especially now that many have been laid off and can't pay their phone bills. Many use a Wi-Fi number instead of traditional phone service, but the only reliable places to get free service are downtown and public areas, which may be closed. Example, you know, libraries, which are currently shut down in our city, cafes, which you can't sit down in or which people may be avoiding due to social distancing precautions, and that at least aren't conducive to learning. This is our biggest hurdle with distance learning. It isn't very accessible to the vulnerable population we serve. So that was kind of in a nutshell, you know, one of the grantees having problems just with communication. The sixth question was, how will you keep students engaged during this time? We know there's going to be a lull. And so, you know, what are programs doing to maintain contact? And there are a variety of ideas were presented, including continuing to provide clients with case management, though services have been reduced. Begin working on job search, frequent phone contact, continuing to track past graduates and support their job search as needed. Another response mentioned ramping up / revising support services to focus on COVID-19 related support people will be looking for and to deal with the new people suddenly out of work and needing our services. They will share resources electronically and offer support via phone, text, Facebook, and Zoom. And then in the seventh question, basically the last question was, what is your current thinking on how to proceed with your current grant? And the responses were varied, but those who are currently training realize that things could change rapidly, forcing them to shut down programs. Others who have not started training programs yet realize that things are fluid and they will have to adjust as necessary. And one program in Milwaukee provided a broader response to all the questions, and I wanted to share that with you here. I don't know how many of you know Chris Litzau. He's from the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps in Milwaukee. And his response, I thought, was worth sharing with you. He said, basically, we are fortunate to have our Project Foundry software. We've had it for the past few years as an integral part of the CERT school, and it provides us the direct communication and instructional management with students. Ours use it while in the classroom and out. We close today for the first day. All students are busy with remote online courses, and we've divided our staff to serve as advisors to advise specifically assigned students throughout the week. In addition, the course instructor is reaching out to each student daily with encouragement, support, and guidance for completion of projects. We're on hold with the end of course hands-on assessments, but are brainstorming environments and opportunities to bring students together to complete these final aspects of the course for completion. We're using all forms of technology for communication and evaluating outdoor classrooms and other creative venues where students will be physically distant but socially connected to perform and participate. It's just ever evolving. And the National Partnership for Environmental Technology Education, PETE, has been a great help with technical guidance and such as cleaning methods for P100 respirators that will plan to activate as appropriate. And he'll be reaching out to NPEET momentarily to ask them assistance for their registering their next cohort for the online HAZWOPER. So they've got, you know, a lot of things going on there too. And there were two others. Auberly had mentioned what they were doing, and as I kind of wrap up here, I'd like to ask, you know, them, also Recycle Force, I know is on here. They explained in their email that they were offering to partner with the city of Indianapolis to provide COVID training and cleanup. I don't know where that stands now, but it sounded like a kind of a fascinating opportunity. And maybe they can speak to that. And then Janet at Santa Fe mentioned that they were assisting environmental companies in locating HAZWOPER-trained people for decontamination deployment. So, and we'll maybe have her speak to that too. So that was basically kind of it in a nutshell. I mean, COVID-19 is affecting everyone, all the communities, training programs to varying degrees, and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. And individual program responses to the pandemic depend on a variety of factors, as we all know, depending on your location, your available resources, et cetera. And maintaining contact with students is a priority for all programs, and the methods of communications with them varies, as do the results. The ability to provide training through distance learning as an alternative to classroom training is a real challenge for some programs, because not all students have access to the internet, and some programs report their curriculum is not designed to be delivered in a traditional or via distance learning. It's more of a traditional classroom concept. So keeping students engaged while knowing an end date to the pandemic, or not knowing an end date to the pandemic, is going to be a major focus and will be an ongoing challenge. And some programs report that with so many people being laid off, even former program graduates may be returning looking for placement assistance, coupled with maybe new clients who are entering the system, that could place a strain on all available resources. So there's a lot of challenges for all of us going forward, and we're going to try to maintain and kind of serve as a repository for any, you know, ideas you have, innovative solutions to ongoing challenges posed by the pandemic, and we'll try to catalog all best practices and lessons learned and disseminate this information to program staff through these upcoming PLCs. So with that kind of summary, maybe we could have each of you kind of go through, and I don't know, Mike, if you want to do this in particular
yes,
order.
Yes, why don't we do this first? Steve, can you give your email address? This would be for people that just want to drop in line and let him know what's going on. We're keeping anecdotal information. Now, you could always respond to our notes and just say, Mike, this is what we're doing now, or we were doing this before, and I'll pass those on to Steve. But Steve, why don't you also give your email address, and
sure,
then we're going to add this to this compilation that we have.
Sure. And my email address is sfenton, F-E-N-T-O-N. So S, that's my first initial of my first name and last name, Fenton, F-E-N-T-O-N, 103@AOL.com.
Steve Fenton at 103@AOL, or just respond to the notes and just drop us a line and say, hey, this is what we're doing, and we've had to shut the program down. Now, there's some takeaways here that we've seen, I think, that are important. For those of you who are not doing anything, you stopped your program, you're not alone, okay? You're not alone. There's lots of people. In fact, we give kudos and give extra credit to those who are able to continue their program. And it almost seems like if you were doing it before you continue it, you're probably seeing this with your kids, that if they had online learning prior to the shutdown, they're continuing with that. For those who weren't doing it before, it's a struggle to try to set this thing up. So the question is, well, let's go to the fallback. Most of us aren't continuing our programs on the way we used to. So the question is, how do we keep our people engaged? And it might be a phone call. You know, we didn't mention Facebook is out of fashion right now, but as you go through our social media directory, you'll see that many programs have Facebook. And it may come down to getting back into that Facebook program and trying to get people interested. It may be a phone call. We're going to put a lot of stories on the post-session notes, but you know, we use on this, and many of you have been on this for a while, no, it's not a perfect system. It's a simple free conferencecall.com. Doesn't cost anything. People call in, and you may be able to, if you have the phone numbers of your people, your participants, whether they've been accepted or if they're in the program, you may just have them call in and just to say hello and that you want to keep in touch. So the challenge, I think, now for those of you who have ongoing distance learning, yay, that is fantastic. We're going to be talking about Zoom and some of those things that you can, that are fairly simple to initiate. Those of you who have time and may be able to start engaging some of your students, but at the minimum, those of you who have none of those, It may be simple things like phone call, going back to Facebook, just saying, hey, you know, this is the situation. We're trying to hold our group. There's something we could send you. Do you have a computer? Is phone? Maybe it'll be text. You might just have to do some texting. So with that, why don't we start out with Ken Alexandra? Ken, you were doing some interesting things in terms of training. Are you able to still do that, or have you had to suspend that program?
No, Mike. But thanks, Steve, for the information and going down the list of the things that you asked. And what one of my response was that we were classified as an essential employer because of our relationship with the Department of Public Works and also the population that we serve is some that are homeless and some that are reentering citizenship through criminal justice. And also we provide the employment training, for those that wanted to get in HAZWOPR and RECRA training. And so we have the employment piece in the morning, and we practice social distancing. We also take temperatures before anyone come in, and anyone that has a high fever, we have a recommendation where they could go and get tested. So we've been fortunate enough to continue our training and employment piece, and because of the two things I mentioned. I had a question about what EPA position is with the environmental workforce development and training. We have so many people that have completed the HAZ-40 and RECRA training. Is there anything in the pipeline that would address how they're going to plan to clean up the city or handle COVID-19 in lieu of what's going on? Because we are actively engaged with the city to try to clean up buses, office buildings, schools, and city-county offices once, you know, they get past the peak and see exactly what's going to be needed. My concern is EPA doing anything to try to use the individuals that has 40. I have over 100 that have completed has 40 on top of the 75 that we done in 2019. And we use some of those already to match up with some of the jobs that are available. So
is California LA Conservation Corps on the line? LA, the reason I say that, and I'll ask everyone else if they've got anything like that going, they have contracts with the county and I believe with the city, and they're doing, and that's where your money will come from, the county or the city. But if you could tap into it, it could be really good because they're going to get funding. And you may have to do a little snooping around on your county managers and your city managers to tell them we've got these people available. And if you could dig into that, you may have a gold mine there. I'm sure it'll depend on how the money flows, but it won't come from EPA directly, but it'll come through the county or the city. Anyone else got any ideas?
Just one more thing before I get off, because yeah, we are keeping our folks engaged by the same method, whether it's text messages, and we also recently set up Zoom, so we're still trying to keep everyone engaged.
Could I also let him know that you want to contact the local environmental remediation companies? They are the ones that are getting the emergency contracts for decontamination in most of the cities that I've heard about.
Okay. You said the local environmental contamination agencies.
No, not agencies. Private sector companies are getting handed emergency contracts to do decontamination. And if you've got that many HAZWOPR trained people, that's the only thing they're looking for is that they've got, you know, their HAZWOPR cert.
Oh, great. Yeah, we're actually involved in trying to find out who's going to be.
What city are you in?
I'm in Indianapolis.
There are some large environmental consulting firms that have contracts with DOD and DOE in Indianapolis.
DOE, okay. That's great.
And so, I would contact them.
What would he be, should he Google? Cleanup firms in Indianapolis?
Remediation companies, because those are the ones that have the, you know, that's who at least the DOD and DOE are going directly to. People that they already have established remediation contracts with.
Right.
They're just doing a change order to that and then sending them out to like Hawaii and Wyoming and all over the place, because they're doing constant cleanup. And so it's, you know, it's that kind of detail work.
You might
with a couple of them, but yes, that's good information.
So you could sub out. It's kind of like what happened during Katrina, where if you had 1910-120 Hazwoper, they were hiring them. They, you know, and you're kind of in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be a sub, or they would hire him direct. It'd be nice if they could sub to you.
Sometimes, so far, the ones I've been dealing with, they've just been hiring these people as temp employees. And it's because there's no time to do the subcontractor, because the, you know, GSA subcontractor requirements and your insurance and all of that, that you have to have for remediation. Don't forget, if you're a job training program, you probably don't have the remediation liability insurance that they would need.
Yeah, the significant thing about our organization is that we also have a alternative staffing agency that the city uses quite frequently that has, you know, the liability insurance to cover some of our trainees that have completed the HAS 40 and the RECRA. So they will absorb the liability if they see that we have partnered with alternative staffing that can cover any potential liability.
Well, I would use that. That's a tool in your toolbook, you know, that a lot of other companies don't have. I didn't have that, so.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good lesson for those of you who may be in that last category of graduates, cohorts over, you're in the placement phase, or you've got people coming back that are looking for jobs. You might want to start doing some searches that Janice and Ken just talked about, of either contacting city, county, municipalities, or the remediation or cleanup firm, just flat out cleanup firms in Indianapolis or something like that on Google, and just give them a cold call and tell them you've got people that have experience and training in cleanup. They say, well, what are your credentials? And, you know, if they have 1910-120, boom, they might say, send them on over. So.
I wanted to ask, and I don't know, if someone has started the project, you know, your job training, and if you're shut down, can you send them out for a few weeks to get the actual job experience and then bring them back when this is all over with? Would that be something that people are, EPA is letting people do?
Well, you could certainly intern them. A lot of programs have interns and apprenticeships, so you could set up an internship or apprenticeship with a company. So they would go out as perhaps an intern. Yeah, you want to keep your guy. So you might suggest, you know, if you make contact with them, say, well, we could use someone on part-time. And then you might want to, at that point, it's a negotiation. Would you like to intern at so many dollars an hour with this company? They need help cleaning buses, flat out. You know.
Definitely
a possibility. It's better than just saying, everyone's on your own, sorry. You know, there's nothing we can do right now. Any other ideas in that topic? Aubrey.
I have an idea.
Oh.
I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Sure.
If you want to check with your state's professional engineering association, usually the environmental companies are members of the Professional Engineers Association. That might be another alternative on where to go find potential temporary jobs.
I would also throw in, that's a good idea, the local American Society of Safety Engineers job board and the local Hazardous Waste Management Society job board. And the and any construction industry job boards, they've been getting this work too.
Well, those two certifications are your OSHA 10 and and ASWAPR will open a lot of doors for you right now.
But there is nothing. There is nothing the EPA is saying, you know, to Washington D.C. is, hey, we've got people that have been trained, some that have already received the ASWAPR. Is it something that you can enforce in states to consider, being that a lot of these are unemployed or underemployed individuals that will hopefully bring down the potential high unemployment rate that we may encounter after this is over with?
Absolutely, and we've gone this. EPA has not a lot of, I wouldn't say power, but influence. A lot of this is on the state and local level. So your most powerful areas in first source hiring is on the municipal level, on the city, and then it goes to county. So really, to the point that the most powerful one is, I think Rochester has got a great story. I don't know if they're on the line, but Rochester, it goes to the city managers and find out who are the city contractors. And they're close to the city management. So it's, can you give me a list of the people who may be involved in cleanup? And they give them a list, and then they call them up and say, we have some people if you're interested. And that's extremely powerful. They've always had more demand than graduates. So it's something to look into. Are you on the phone, Aberly? You're really one of these outstanding programs, and you're in that category of those who have been doing this and had a lot of foresight, and you're just rolling along, aren't you?
Right now, this is Jake from our Pauli and Aberly Foundation in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Right now, we are in our recruitment phase, and lucky for us, we're in a phase where we can put together a lot of infrastructure. So as we're recruiting, we have a network of, I don't have an exact number, but a large network of nonprofit partners and referral partners. For instance, maybe like a veterans leadership program is one of our programs. So we're having them make those referrals for our clients that will be recruited for our program, which we are planning on having this August. Late this August, shortly just after the all grantee meeting. Hopefully that all happens, but we will adjust as necessary. One thing that we are foreseeing that we have began to discuss recently is that we want to maintain contact with our recruits. And since some of the concerns are they may not have internet access or reliable phones, what we're doing is building a support system around them. So if they were referred from the nonprofit partners I spoke about earlier, we're building a team around them to help them support, so sort of a team case management style, and also making sure they have multiple outlets to contact us, whether that be Facebook pages, Zoom, multiple phone numbers, emails, and setting a contract of this is when we'll be checking in. And we'll also be sending, hey, here's some tasks that you can do remotely to prepare for our program.
Excellent.
Okay. Excellent, yeah.
You know, the social media is good. I like this idea of, and many of you have programs that are referred through case management, and most have case managers. And I don't know, are the case managers keeping in touch with their constituents? Have you? They're still staying active, aren't they?
So, yes, all of our case managers for all of our programs, we're working from home. But we are remotely contacting our participants, and we've had some good success, maybe because they're not busy doing much, just staying home, but we have been able to maintain contact.
Same here.
Excellent.
What is your experience that you're working through case managers? Pretty much.
We actually I don't know who you're talking to. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We actually, like the people that are running this program, we all are the case managers as well. But we might work with other nonprofits who also have case managers. So that's where we're forming that teamship and collaborating on maintaining contact with our clients.
I think the scary part is those, and I really like what you're doing. You're waiting till August for your cohort to begin, and you're going to jump, you're going to save a couple months by redoing your scanning, recruiting early. The ones that are most concerned are the ones that are halfway through, that you don't lose them. And that's a challenge for some of our grantees. And I think that's, if we could throw around some strategies and think about strategies maybe between now and the next one of what can, say you've done HazWhopper, you've done, maybe you've done the life skills and you've done maybe HazWhopper, you've done OSHA 10. You do with your students, you try to give them some reference materials. They don't, and again, it's different. Do they, if they have computers, do they have phones? This is a real challenge. And I guess if those people, if we could help them retain their students so that when August comes and everyone says, come on back, they don't say, I'm finished with this program, you know, or something like that. And I guess there might be a little bit of marketing going on here between now and when classes resume to keep people's interest. And it might be something in terms of placement opportunities and some of the skills that they're going to be getting to try to keep them engaged, that say, I'm willing to hang in here instead of getting some alternative job or a job that could be much better if they completed the program. Anyone, some suggestions or questions?
I got a couple of questions, Mike. First, we don't exactly know when the RFP is coming out. And I know it was June, back in 18. I don't know when it was in 19. What was
they've told us early summer, and now they're summer. So one thing about EPA is it rarely comes early. So my guess, it's summer. Now, what does summer mean? You know, down in Charleston, where Steve is, it's already summer. And where some of you are, August. So that gives them a leeway between May and August. It's not going to be, and we're going to go back to the RFP as soon as we get this through our system and talk more about this COVID-19. We're going to get back on these issues of ranking criteria and labor market assessment and how you can do that. And that first thing we'll start talking about from home, the things you can do without being in the office or being out in the field. But you're right, it's summer. Now, when I hear summer, from what I know about EPA, I'm thinking August, maybe.
Okay.
You know. The advantage here is it's a 21. They can't give the money out till after October 1st, 2020. They can't by law. So it's out of 21 budget. So they're really under not any pressure. They can, if they wanted to wait till September, they could. It's not like they have to give the money out before September 31st. I think there's more of a propensity to push it out further than to pull it in. So my thinking is that I'd like to think it was a lot like this last year, where it would be nice if, and it's two, you get 60 days, so 2 months to write it. So if it's July and August, then they could give it out in September. It would pretty much mirror this last year. You would get the money in maybe January, and then you could start your cohorts in the spring of next year. I kind of like to think that might be how it fall out. So even if the RFP comes out in August or even September, October, November, they could still get that money out in maybe February. So what we want to do is try to get the next training cycle, get your cohorts, you know, kind of started in spring, summer of 21 is what we're looking for.
So Mike, could I just add in here? I've been reviewing some of the information from the Spanish flu and talking to some of my epidemiologist buddies at Los Alamos who are running the models. We should also, I suggest, be taking into account if we are applying for these grants that are going to, for the 2020 fiscal year. We may not be back to normal by August. I don't know if people understand that the social distancing after the Spanish flu went for 2 years, 18 months. And nobody's really talked about that, but I just wanted to throw that out there, that even though we may have reduced, you know, we may not be in the same situation we're in right at the moment, there we should be taking into a planning that there's still going to be social distancing requirements even after we do go back to work. In fact, no one I know that I've talked to yet has even talked about what their get back to normal plans are yet.
Good point. And of course, our objective is to get that grant, and we'll worry about extending it after we get the grant. So for those, many of us, what we want to do is we want to get this RFP, and we want to get that new grant out or get re-upped. But you're exactly, good point, very good point. We could adjust work plans later if we could get this grant applied. That's the thing. The other issue we're going to have is we're going to be able to extend our grants, but they're not going to give us more money. So I'm not anticipating any supplements. It would be nice. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it has never happened in the past. So where they're going to say, we're going to give you an extra year and we're going to give you another $100,000, that would be nice. But
no, that's not going to happen.
I would count on it. So in your internal planning, you're going to have to think about, you might be able to carry your program another year, but can you carry your payroll another year? So that all those things. And I don't know if you have to be in a real rush to revise your work plans with your regional coordinator. It's important to talk to them, but, you know, you want to keep open-ended. We don't know where this is going to – you've got a very good point. We don't know where this is going to go. So you don't – you know, your work plans are based on certain things, but they may change. So I don't think you're going to have a problem with the extension. It'll be more your internal budgeting planning that may be something you all are going to have to think about in your group, how that's going to work. The one nice thing about these grants is that they're 3 years. So, you know, you've got 2 years of training and a third year of placement. So you could squeak into that third year fairly easy without needing an extension. So
I'm using this time to get my final report done. So
someone had a question. Yes.
This is Angela. I just wanted to mention, while we're talking about internal budgets, that we need to recognize that the EPA is going to continue to be overwhelmed with COVID-19 issues. And, for example, we have not yet gotten our release from the National Office for our program that was supposed to start in January.
Wow.
Okay. And it's April.
Wow.
And, you know, I've been in contact, and, you know, it's just, you know, they grind exceedingly slow. And with all of this extra emphasis and distraction, things that normally may have proceeded, you know, in a month or 2 months may be dragging out for 4, 5, 6 months.
That's
so for internal planning purposes, if you get the next grant, the budgeting and release of budgets may be much slower than it has been in the past.
Very good. Good point. Anyone else not get their funding yet or has gotten their funding?
There's two
Alaska.
Of us. Okay, that's
Alaska
three.
Four. I don't know if you can hear
Alaska.
Me, but yeah, we haven't gotten it yet either. It's not... They don't have any problem with the work plan, but something about our policies that they don't like, a new person who's working from home. So, but bottom line is the check hasn't been, we haven't been funded yet.
Anyone else?
Hi, this is Jennifer Bridges, code enforcement with the City of Marlin. I'm here in place of our city manager, Cedric Davis, who is in a meeting at the moment.
Do you know if you've received permission to spend money? Or
I'm sorry?
Oh, we were wondering. We're kind of seeing maybe won the award, but they have not processed all the paperwork because of the delays in moving forward with work plans and budgets.
Okay.
That's interesting. it's interesting to know that that some of you have you're not ready to roll yet, which is that's 3 months. We anticipated probably by March, February, March, you would be on a roll. Okay.
Hmm. Something else that I thought was interesting, Mike, and it ties a little bit off of what Janet was saying, which is, you know, we're kind of, you know, in brand new territory here. And for those of you that might be looking at writing your RFP or applying for the next one that's due to come out hopefully in the summer, you know, thinking about how to handle distance learning or unique environments, and if there's a possibility to build in some flexibility with using some resources that are out there, like the Great Lakes Conservation Community or Community Conservation Corps was doing. It might be something worth thinking about. It. I know it's hard to think back, but, you know, for those of us, especially in the Midwest, you know, last year in February, we were dealing with weeks of people not being able to be in classes because of extreme cold. You know, or here I'm right along the Mississippi River, you know, we had challenges when we had, you know, 100 days of record level flooding. And so, you know, there are some of these events that are coming up either on a local scale or a national scale that could impact your ability to provide the standard level, if you will, of a teaching that you do. And so what are some alternatives that might be out there? So I kind of think that that's kind of what I took away a little bit from what Janet was saying, was that, you know, it might be worth it to think about some of these options as you're planning for applying for the next RFP.
Right. And we could talk about this in future PLCs when we get back to applying for this new grant. We may want to consider tablets like Florida or Janet has done in Santa Fe before the grant even starts. As we had mentioned earlier in this call, it seems like those who are already doing it are having an easier time when there's a problem. So it could be that in your budgeting, you know, the least cost, as we said in last week's notes that Janice provided us with, your least cost is going to be buying tablets. Your biggest cost will be your training contractors doing curriculum for your that you could distribute. So, but it is something to consider when we start talking about curriculum development. And it's certainly something you may want to include in your new proposal. And we probably will be talking about that. I think we'll be talking about, and we've already gone way over, but we'll probably be talking about things like Zoom and free conference call that we could start looking at strategies to keep our participants involved, or maybe do hybrid programs where we're doing a combination of phone calls, face-to-face, and Zoom, so as a hybrid type of thing.
I was also wondering how many of the programs out there have got sufficient funding to maintain your own staff for the next 3 to 4 months?
Ooh. No additional funding over here at West End, but I think we had an emergency meeting last week, and we're secure at least until September if things go sideways.
I would love to be able to ask everyone, but I don't think that it would be appropriate for us to do it. But that's a very good question. How long can you last? And you may, this is an internal discussion you may want to have, and you may have to bring in some other people to see if they could supplement your program somehow.
Because I know there are community colleges that are shutting down till the end of the year. You know,
wow.
At least in the world that I'm in, they're looking at laying off people and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just, you know, some organizations, this is going to hit pretty tough. You know what I mean? So, as a matter of fact, I got to go. I got to call my mortgage company and see if I can delay my payment.
I feel bad that I've held people up in our meeting. But why don't we continue in 2 weeks? And,
okay.
And great, and I think we're sharing some good information. So we'll send you some notes on Friday. Yes.
This is Alma with EPA. I just wanted to let you all know that the job training coordinators are all working doggedly to get things done. It's constant changing things. I will say that some of the delays that may have happened to some regions is the accounting system, they shut it down. I think it was on a Friday, March 14th, and it was not allowed to come back up until early April. They did not, headquarters did not populate, did not put the money into the account, even though we thought they were putting it there. So we were trying to award, and the comptrollers would not allow the funding recs to be moved forward for award because not all the money was sitting there. They had kind of put this little seed money. And they were waiting, headquarters had made a decision to not put the money into the system until it converted to the new accounting system in April. And so, and then of course by then COVID hit, and so things may be delayed for that reason. So I wanted you to be aware of that. There is also some guidance that came out on the 27th of this month regarding some of the loosening of some of the ways that we're going to deal with COVID. So I will forward that to you. It's something that can go to all the grantees. I was just about to forward it to mine. And I will also include you on that. I'll forward it to you so you can use that, and people can, people should have it, but like myself, other POs may be lagging a little behind on getting it out to their grantees. And then that way, anyone that was not on the call would also have those links.
Alma, this is Vanessa. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Vanessa. Hi, Catherine. I know all of you.
Hey, Catherine. I just wanted to, well, we did not apply or receive funding for this year's award, but could you send that guidance to me also?
Sure.
If she sends it to me, I'll send it on the notes. I'll send it to everyone.
Oh,
are you on
you.
The appeal? Yes.
But I will
thank
send it
you.
To you, Vanessa.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
So so the government's, we're good for it. You're good for it.
The check's in the mail. Yeah, I've heard that one before. Yeah. That's what I'm telling all my credit card companies. Yeah, check's in the mail.
Wow.
Well, thanks, everybody. And
thank you, Mike.
Thanks, 2 weeks, same time, same place. We'll continue.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks.